The Yankees won 5-2 today against the Washington Nationals. We saw some power. We had Wells go yard. We had Jazz Chisholm go yard. We've seen Alex Verdugo have 3 hits today. Anthony Volpe. We're going to get into it. Before we do, be sure to like, subscribe, and comment. And also want to let you guys know that we have memberships on this channel. So if you want to have access to exclusive perks, and mainly the thing that we're very excited about, access to daily mailbags, you can actually sign up for the field level membership at $6.99 a month, and you will get access to those daily mailbags. We do have a mailbag question today, Gary. Before we get into that, though, want to give a shout out. Juan Cepeda, new member, field level, appreciate you. Glenn Campbell, second deck, appreciate you. And Alex Rodriguez, which I don't think it's actually A-Rod himself, but
I hope it is.
Appreciate you nonetheless. It'd be nice if it was A-Rod himself, but yeah. I thought that was cool. Shout outs to Juan Cepeda, Kid from LI, Carlos Marrero, Jeff J, and Ed W. Thank you guys for being field level members. And Gary, we got this mailbag that I'm going to read off and have you answer it first. And this question is, I know our first priority in the offseason is to re-sign Soto, but do you gentlemen think if we can let some money go in any way, we need to do? Do you think we have a chance at Mason Miller in the offseason? I know nobody will ever be Mariano, but this guy is also a pitcher. Maybe grab Crochet as well. Thank you guys. Much appreciated. Be well. Enjoy the game. So that came before the game. So it was earlier in the day. And I actually need to pull up who sent it to us, because for whatever reason, I was so excited to get to the mailbag, totally forgot who sent that to us.
Okay, so Mason Miller is a trade, obviously. Mm-hmm. Mason Miller is a player that everyone should be interested in. And I've said this before. If Mason Miller is available, literally everybody should be on him. He's got the best fastball in the game. He's got one of the best breaking balls in the game. He's disgusting. So, yeah, if Mason Miller became available, I guess the question is, could the Yankees be in on that player? I would say no, Jake, and I'll tell you why. I don't think the Yankees have the ammo to make it happen. I personally don't. You may feel differently, but in my estimation, the Yankees' biggest prospect will be a part of the major league team, and he'll be a big leaguer by this offseason. That is Jason Dominguez. I don't think Jason Dominguez will be a player that's available at all, and I think that's what it would take to go get a guy like Mason Miller. Now, when we're talking about who was the other player that we were just mentioning? Oh, Garrett Crochet. Garrett Crochet is a free agent, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Garrett Crochet is a player who told the White Sox that he's not available to pitch unless he has an extension in October. Now, this is a player clearly that doesn't want to get hurt, right? This player does not want to get hurt before his extension. That's essentially what he's saying. I'm not sure. I know we said, Jake, that we would be open for the Yankees trading for this guy. He's a 25-year-old pitcher. He throws almost 100 miles an hour, if not 100, a lefty. He's got all the stuff in the world. I mean, he's everything that you would want. He just doesn't have the pedigree of going 200-plus innings, and that's fine. He's got to do it first. Is it possible? I would say, yeah. I would say it's definitely possible, and we talk about budget all the time. There are a lot of things happening with the Yankees this year that are positive in terms of budget and should make Yankees fans feel like this should be a more aggressive offseason than you're used to. People look at Juan Soto and they see this contract is probably going to cost us north of $600 million, and you'd probably be right. But the way you need to be looking at these contracts is, what do they cost the Yankees annually? Same thing with Bryce Harper in Philadelphia. You see the big round, $330 million, and you think to yourself, man, how are they going to afford these other players? But when you actually pull back the hood and see, what does Bryce Harper, what will Juan Soto cost? And Bryce Harper in Philadelphia cost $25 million a year. That's a pretty affordable deal in terms of Major League Baseball with a sport without a salary cap. I mean, is $25 million the end of the world? The Yankees were paying Donaldson $25 million. My whole point here, the Yankees have guys like Clay Holmes coming off the books, players like Gleyber Torres, Anthony Rizzo is likely off the books. Now, Juan Soto is already being paid $31.5 million. He's going to get a raise, but don't sell us short on how much money we have to spend this offseason. Don't be surprised if a Garrett Crochet, a Corbin Burns, maybe some guys in relief become available for the Yankees and still under that $300 million budget. So I'm looking forward to what happens this deadline because this offseason, because Jake, we're going to be covering it and we're going to be asking this team to get a lot better regardless of what happens, you know, going into October. So we're looking forward to that.
So Crochet is in his second year of arbitration. So not a free agent, but I think basically what he's asking not a free agent. Okay. Could they make a trade for him? And I mean, the White Sox basically told us, even as bad as they were refusing to trade him for anything less than what they were asking for. And the Yankees came to them and, you know, they had talked about Spencer Jones and what have you, and they were not interested in the Yankees' offer. So I don't think the Yankees would be able to get him because I don't think the Yankees are willing to offer whatever the White Sox are trying to get him for. And let's be honest here. I mean, the trade deadline was definitely kind of a disappointment for a lot of teams. And just in general this year, I think, you know, kind of the value for a lot of guys was way higher than maybe it should have been in other years. Reason being, Gary, is no one's really separated. So a lot of teams still were in it. Too many teams, in fact, to the point where, you know, I started wondering maybe if the trade deadline was too early in the season, maybe it should have been a little bit later. Obviously, you can't just change that in the middle of the season, but a lot of teams being in it, you have 30 teams in this league and maybe 20, 22 at max were still in the discussion to make the playoffs. The expanded playoffs also helps, but it's been a year where no one is wanting to kind of take over. So I think that kind of led to it. But with that being said, I mean, I still think Crochet is going to be a pretty penny, this offseason. It's going to cost you most of your farm. And I don't think the Yankees, even if they tried to do that, I don't think that they're interested in what the Yankees have to offer, if I'm being honest with you. But I do think if they were going to get either of them, I feel like Mason Miller would be more likely, if I'm being honest. Clay Holmes is in a contract year, not a guarantee to be back. And I understand the injury sucks, but the Yankees have done this before. They have gone after injured guys with the hope like, hey, because you've mentioned it before, Brian Cashman wants to win the deal. He's not really willing to, you know, get absolutely fleeced just to get the player. But at the same time, I feel like it almost kind of benefits him in this case, you know, his ideology, because, you know, he went after Frankie Montas, who his value was a little bit lower because of the injury. Right. He went after Juan Soto. His value was lower, not because of the injury, but because he was in a contract year going into it.
So this is the Brian Cashman special is what you're saying.
I think I'm not saying get ready, buy your Mason Miller jerseys, which I don't know what number he would wear. And it doesn't have his name on the back. So I don't, you know, but I'm not saying that. But I'm saying between those two guys that were brought up. And by the way, they were brought up by Wolf Rock in 74. So I did eventually find that. We have another thank you, and we have another mailbag, so I will also bring that up after this. But I think when you look at this between Crochet and Mason Miller, I still think Mason Miller could be that project where the Yankees try to get, essentially, because don't let anybody tell you that the Yankees were totally fine getting rid of Michael King. Okay. They felt great about being able to stretch him out. I think Mason Miller would be a candidate for that. I'm not saying he would, but I'm saying that they could look into that. And then you have a young pitcher who essentially the sky's the limit. He can be a Class A 2.0 and have a guy like Class A in the back end, or you successfully stretch him out and he ends up being an ace and you have him at age 26 for the rest of his career. So I wouldn't rule out Mason Miller. Also, I think the A's and the Yankees have had so many trades between the two. I think there's a way that they could meet in the middle, maybe even take a little bit of a handshake deal. Yeah, we'll do this, but at the deadline, you know, it's going to cost you a little bit more if you want one of our guys or what have you. I know we talked at length about that during the trade deadline season and everything. I would never rule out either of these guys becoming Yankees, but I'll say this. I think it's more likely they sign a Corbin Burns than trade for a Garrett Crochet.
Oh, completely agree. Because when you sign a player like Corbin Burns, it doesn't cost anything but Howell's money. Mm-hmm. Now, Howell, a lot of people have said, yeah, he's all about his money. He's all about profits. And I'm perfectly okay with people concluding that. But let's remember something. Juan Soto, Corbin Burns being Yankees makes Hal Steinbrenner money. Don't forget that. These players help him make money. I understand spending money is money out the door, right, overhead. But they sell more chicken buckets if Corbin Burns is starting the game rather than a Marcus Stroman. No offense to Marcus Stroman or anybody else than a Will Warren. You really think Will Warren going out and pitching for the Yankees in pinstripes in August is making him money? It's not, guys. So let's remember, we want them to make as much money as possible. And if they make more money, that means they're winning. Now, I get it. They're making them a lot of money already. You can argue that's perfectly fine with Hal. But if they went in deep in October, how is it possibly losing Hal Steinbrenner money making a World Series? So let's be hopeful for what happens this offseason, what happens in December, because I really think, like you just mentioned, I think Corbin Burns is in play. He's a free agent. We'll be taking him away from Baltimore. It's very similar to what happened with Gerrit Cole. The Yankees need guys they can rely on for innings. Corbin Burns is that guy. So I don't want to look too much into the future, but I want to make sure we answer that question.
Of course. And then we have two mailbag questions from Ed W. The first one, unless I'm reading the stat sheet wrong, a major problem in the Yankees pitching. I've not done that before. The Yankees pitching is that the Yankees are leading the league in most pitches thrown, most pitches per at bat. It's brutal, especially when you look at starting pitcher longevity in game, bullpen usage, and combine it with how many innings get extended after we get two outs but can't close out a third hitter. Is this something Boone even tracks, and how can we get them to be more efficient? This was a big problem against Colorado, for example. We were making the starters look efficient like Maddox. That's the first one, and we'll get to the second one after this. I think this is perfect. I'm glad this was brought up because I do, and I've said, Gary, they are not super efficient. I mean, how many times do we see Rodon getting to pitch 108 and it's the, you know, first batter in the fifth inning? You know, so I actually like this a lot because I think this is really how I felt about today. It was noticeable. Nestor Cortez threw 91 pitches, okay?
Yep.
And he got into the seventh inning and got two outs in the seventh inning. So I like that this was brought up because I've been saying, and you've been saying, the thing about the Yankees that was helping them earlier in the season, they had more length, which is to be expected. Hitters aren't as great. They're not as revved up. Hitters hit way better in the warmer climate later in the year. But they were, you know, pitchers were giving them length. They were being more efficient. Strikeouts are great and they're flashy and everything. Strikeouts also guarantee you have to throw more pitches than, say, a guy that's just a sinker ball pitcher, a guy that's a fly ball pitcher. So I guess really, I don't think, you know, really from that perspective, I wouldn't say you're reading the stat sheet wrong. I think it is a major problem. Now, I don't really know what the question was with that, to be fair, because I think it was kind of a statement, but I loved it because I think it needs to be brought up, and we've talked about before, but this is why today's start from Nestor Cortez, and we're going to get into it more after the second question that, you know, and I'll have you rebuttal on this first. But after the second question, we'll get to it. People on social media thought Cortez pitched poorly today because of how hard these balls were getting hit. And I would say it actually worked in his benefit that, you know, the defense showed up today, but also he only gave up four hits and he was efficient. He had 57 strikes and 91 pitches. Didn't even get to 100 because these guys were getting hits off him. And what I mean by hits, but like actually like, you know, contact. And the defense is just coming up with fly balls, line drives, ground balls. And I understand it's not the most pretty start ever, but to be fair, that's kind of the name of the game, is just to get through innings and give up the fewest runs possible. And that's what Cortez did today.
Yeah. And I guess what I'm wondering is, what are expectations of a five starter for a contender?
Mm-hmm.
Nestor Cortez had gone 14 innings before today's start, scoreless. He hadn't walked a single batter. He comes into today's game against a young Washington team, right? Dylan Cruz, Abrams, Wood, But he came into this game, gave up some hard contact, and that hard contact turned into outs. Now, it turned into a long start that set our bullpen up to potentially help sweep the rest of this series. Now, it's no guarantee we sweep, but the best way to do that is by protecting our bullpen, and our bullpen has proven to be volatile. Now, having said this, when you're talking about out pitches and how many pitches a guy's, would you rather have somebody nibbling all game like a Clay Holmes that gives up weaker contact and he's struggling to get outs? Or would you want someone around the strike zone occasionally he's going to get into hitters counts, he pitches to contact, and then he allows the defense to work? Sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't. I would much rather see a pitcher that gives us an opportunity to see his name on the mound in the sixth or seventh inning, because I've seen too many times with this Yankees organization, they are way too comfortable going into the bullpen in the fifth or sixth inning, seemingly not caring about the length of their starting pitchers. Now, obviously they do, but how do they apply it? We mentioned earlier this year, Aaron Boone actually did a really nice job of pushing guys like Marcus Stroman, pushing the Rodons, right? All of these guys, Luis Gil, deeper into games, and it helped the Yankees. It made us look really good. It made our bullpen look good. Clay Holmes looked good. But the longer, when I started bringing up innings, right, Marcus Stroman, all of these guys, Nestor Cortez, they don't have a pedigree of going 200 innings. What are they going to look like in the middle of the year? What are they going to look like at the end of the year? And sure enough, Jake, they started to struggle going deeper into games. And what happened around that time? People started complaining about Clay Holmes. People started complaining about, we need a new closer, we need another reliever, we need another starter, right? So when guys are pitching around the strike zone, you're going to see hard contact in big league baseball. It just happens. But you need to do this smart. You need to put hitters away or allow them to put the ball in play and let your defense work. Nestor Cortez did that today. If you expected Nestor Cortez with 91, 92, occasionally up to 94 to miss bats all day, every day, three starts in a row, Nestor Cortez wouldn't be Nestor Cortez. He would be a $200 million pitcher. So just temper expectations and understand who you have on the mound in terms of personnel. And I think you'll be a lot more satisfied with what you're seeing out of Nestor.
No, I agree with that. I do want to apologize to Ed W because he did ask two questions and it was kind of in that like giant paragraph. So I thought it was a statement, but actually he asked two questions. One, is this something Boone even tracks? I'm going to say it's something he has access to. He's aware of this probably. Does he actively track it? I don't know. I don't think there's necessarily an emphasis on how they get outs. You know, I don't think he's telling, yeah, Garrett, we'd like you to just, you know, serve up soft contact instead of striking guys out. I think he would rather have the ace throw 12 strikeouts instead of having him throw four and, you know, getting guys out more efficiently, I guess, for the pitch count. I don't really think there's an emphasis on that. But I think the number two thing that was asked here, and this isn't the second question, this is just the two that were in the first, it was how can we get them more efficient? I think this is a fair question. Now, I think it really comes down to this. You know, if you're hitting the strike zone, that's why like the first pitch strike is just, it's a killer for batters. When you pound the strike zone and you get that first pitch strike, now you can like maybe test the waters a little bit, maybe throw something outside, and depending on the umpire, you steal one. And now you're up 0-2. Now you're in the driver's seat. Now they're guessing on whatever you're going to throw because you could throw anything. You could throw it wherever. And, you know, now you have essentially this batter in just kind of Schitt's Creek because they're sitting there like, well, I want to swing because I got to protect myself, but also I got to be disciplined. And what we often see is that leads to a lot of indecision, swords, if you will, where, you know, they'll come through and, you know, they'll go, you know, essentially on a check swing. And that's what happens. But the thing that allows you to be efficient is first pitch strikes. If you have your command, you're not wild all over the strike zone, if you can hit the strike zone consistently and start every single batter 0-1, you're in the driver's seat to really have a great start. It's when you start getting a 2-0 counts and what have you, your pitch count is going to go up, especially if you're a strikeout pitcher. So right. That's what I would say. I think they've done a lot better as of late with that, especially, you know, with that innings, the scoreless inning streak that we were just talking about between the three. But I definitely like that it was brought up because I think it's fair.
Yeah, they know about efficiency. They're trying to go as deep into these games as possible, but sometimes these pitchers don't do enough work to get themselves that far into the game. Let's remember something. There was a time when I watched Marcus Stroman pitch three starts in a row with five walks or more. Why? Because that comeback sinker that he's trying to establish the outside part of the zone, he wasn't hitting that corner with his most important pitch. Now, when you do that, you're essentially telling the hitter, if anything starts away, I'm not swinging. I'm not swinging. And I'm going to get ahead of counts. And guess what? You throw 90 miles an hour, you're behind. I'm going to make hard contact consistently. It's exactly what happened. But what have we seen the last few starts from Stroman? We saw a player hitting the strike zone on the corner consistently. And suddenly that breaking ball that's away, instead of it being an 0-2 waste pitch, you're seeing people offer at it. It's all about trust. Hitters need to trust their eyes. That's what hitting is. When they see a pitch, if they trust, okay, I think I'm seeing a comeback fastball, and all day you've been throwing that pitch coming back for a strike, this is what made Greg Maddux so good. This is what made John Smoltz so good. This is why you see guys, when they see Garrett Cole on the mound, what are you swinging at on a slider 2 feet outside? Why? Because the hitter isn't trusting their eyes, because they believe you're doing that on purpose. You throw a pitch that's outside, it's a foot outside. They trust, because you've been throwing strikes all day, that pitch must come back. It must. And that's what happens. They trust that it's a comeback fastball, and it happens to be a pitch going the other way. But when you see pitchers missing bad, right? We've seen, I think the pitcher that actually comes to mind the most in our rotation is Carlos Rodon. Carlos Rodon is a pitcher.
Misses high a lot.
Right. If you see Carlos Rodon throwing a slider, and every single time you see a breaking ball, it is a ball in the dirt, right? Not a bad place to miss, but what does it do? If all day you didn't throw any breaking balls for quality strikes, they know if it's a breaking ball, I can take that pitch. It's a chase pitch. But the Yes broadcast also mentioned every time when he actually snaps it off in those well-located strikes with his breaking ball, every once in a while when he gives you the chase pitch 0-2, the hitter's trusting that pitch must be a strike. And it changes the complexion of the outing. It changes how far in an outing you can go. And it's amazing that, and I can't say these pitchers don't know this, it's much harder than what people make it out to be to throw quality breaking balls or quality fastballs around the edges. It's why you pay a lot of money for guys who do it consistently. It's the reason why people pay Blake Snell all this money to do this, Garrett Cole, all these names that you could mention, right? So they know about efficiency. It's just a matter of if you have the personnel to get it done consistently. And obviously the Yankees have a little bit more of it than most other organizations. We would just like a little bit more to make us feel better here at this pod.
No, I agree with that. And very well said, Gary. The second one here, and by the way, shout out to you guys with the mailbag questions. It's gone right into kind of the stuff we really wanted to talk about, especially with Nestor. Like, I already feel like we've covered our Nestor topic, essentially, because, I mean, we just touched on it because of that comment or that question. The second question, this one is really fascinating. I've seen this in the comment section, probably from Ed W., and now Ed is throwing it out there for the mailbag. Have we considered how much of Glaber's issues are psychological? To me, the benching seemed to snap him out of a funk by placing some serious pressure on him. Unfortunately, some people only move at the speed of pain. Does that affect his value in your view? And is the player's manager the right guy to keep him on his toes? To me, a move to third would have been cataclysmic for him as when he was at shortstop. He admitted to having psychological issues away from second and was glad he said no. So I love this, and I'm going to answer this right away because we're going to talk about Glaber. We've been talking very highly about Glaber. I texted you today. I was like, I love Glaber again. And you know what? I thought about it. And he was actually, it's funny, it all came full circle. He was the opening day leadoff hitter. And I thought it was a little weird. I'm not going to lie. I thought Volpe should have been. I think we talked about that. And then Volpe became the leadoff hitter. And then, yeah, we got over that. But Glaber, he gets on base. He's been great as of late. He now has back-to-back games with home runs. So that's, I love these back-to-backs lately. But the thing about Glaber talking about, you know, that comment is I think it's 100% psychological. And I'm actually going to say something I think people actually forgot. Gleyber was going to have a really good year. And then he got hurt. He got hit on the hand. And I really think that did something to him. I really do. Early on in the season, you remember when he got hit in the hand? Really hard?
I do remember him getting hit. I just personally, I never used it as a reason as to why he wasn't playing well. I just personally don't.
I never thought it was, but then when I really felt when I really thought about it, I think it messed him up. I think it messed him up. I'm not saying that he was scared of the ball or anything like that, but I think like it really threw off his swing. I think it threw off his mechanics. You started to see the leg kick wasn't, you know, consistent. Notice when Glaber's hitting it well. Now, I still always will say he needs to go with the toe tap. He goes with the toe tap with two strikes. Why does he do it all the time? If you're going with the toe tap on two strikes, essentially you're saying that's what you do when you need to, you know, you need to buckle down. You need to get a hit here. You need to make contact. Then why aren't you doing that all the time? But you know Glaber is locked in when his leg kick is just perfect. He has the leg kick, almost like a Mariano Rivera leg kick, which is bizarre. And then he puts it down and he just everything is in the right place at the right time. And you're seeing him pulling the ball. And you notice the power's not really there anymore. He's not hitting bombs anymore. He's hitting line drives very, you know, reminiscent to a Giancarlo Stanton. So I actually think that's because he's locked in. I think when he's pulling the ball, that's when Glaber's at his best. I'll take him hitting Oppo, don't get me wrong. But I think when Glaber's pulling the ball like that, that's how you know he's really locked in. And I really think the benching, I think there are huge moments in this season as we have 30 games left that we'll look back on and be like, it sounds funny, but that might have actually been the difference between winning the World Series and not. And I think one of those things that isn't talked about nearly enough is Aaron Judge getting thrown out of the game. I think it lit a fire under his ass. He'd never been tossed. Since then, he's on pace for 77 home runs in a full 162 game season. That moment, but Glaber getting benched, I really think to the point of this this question, I do think he has a psychological issue. I think a lot of athletes have this. I think it's very normal. But I think it bothers some more, and I think it bothers Glaber more than the average. And I think when Boone, who's a player's manager, really took it out on Glaber, when Verdugo was just as guilty of not hustling, he took it out on Glaber. Instead of Glaber sitting there demanding a trade, wanting to be released, all of that, he went as soon as he got off the bench, because he was benched for like four games. He got off the bench and immediately changed his demeanor. You're seeing him run to first. He's not blazing fast. So him running to first isn't going to look pretty, but you can see him actually trying. And I'll say this. I think his defense got better. There are still errors. He's still not a great defensive second baseman, but there are those flashes that you see where this guy can be a total game changer for the Yankees if he continues to play like this going into October. It's why, even though we got, blowback in the comments section, it's why I really think he's the key in October. I think they really have needed a leadoff hitter, Gary, and I think they found one in the guy that they originally had in Gleyber Torres to start the season.
Yeah, I think all that's fair. I'm going to go the opposite direction. I don't think this is a psychological issue with Gleyber Torres or was. I believe everything wrong with Gleyber Torres and what always will be is discipline. I think it is all discipline. And I'm going to compare this situation very much to myself in the stove. Remember, me growing up, I was an only child that loved. My mom was a Southwest Airlines flight attendant, so I was home a lot by myself. Remember, my mom told me every day, do not, for the love of God, touch the stove. And what do you think I did? I touched the stove. And year after year after year, I touched the stove, despite what my mom would tell you. Now, mind you, my mom was the most important person in my life. I would not listen to her. And one day, Jake, don't you know, I got burnt. And that was the last day I touched the stove. It took that to happen for me to have the wisdom to never do it again. Now, remember, if Gleyber Torres was never benched, would it have mattered if he received that promotion to lead off? In my estimation, it wouldn't have. I don't think it would have made a world of a difference, not any inkling of a difference if Gleyber Torres became a leadoff.
I think it puts more pressure on him.
Yeah, anything. I don't think it would have mattered at all. If the Yankees put Gleyber Torres from the 8 spot to the 9 spot, bring him from 9 to leadoff or third, sandwiched between Soto and Judge, I think he would have hit 200 all year. He would have been useless. And then everybody would have been saying, get rid of Gleyber, because now the crowds are split, right? But I think if Gleyber Torres wasn't benched by Aaron Boone, we'd be talking about the same Gleyber Torres that we've been begging to put in effort. The same thing we've been asking from Verdugo about effort, we'd be begging from Gleyber Torres. And remember, without that benching, without the emergence of Gleyber Torres, to which we're seeing right now, whether or not you guys want him back in 2025, I'm talking to you, the viewer. If you don't want him back, remember something. If Gleyber Torres isn't this version that you've seen the past 3 weeks in October, we don't have a chance to win in October. We need something from all these players, and something happened with Gleyber Torres to get us that 2023 version of Gleyber Torres, that 2022 version that we were waiting to see, we were hoping to see. So you don't have to want him back, but you have to get his production that we're seeing right now. And whether or not the benching was the reason, someone needs to figure out what was it that changed, because something did change. And Jake, I'm going to chalk it up. I'm not going to chalk it up to a hit by pitch, anything like that. I think it was a minor factor. I think it, right, maybe that week, but over the course of an entire season, for him to be essentially MIA in terms of effort, production, defensive effort, production, all of it, the player we're seeing right now, I think it's all predicated on leadership. And at some point or another, Aaron Boone finally woke up and did something about it. He burnt him on the stove. And luckily for the Yankees and our fans, we get to watch this version of Gleyber Torres, hopefully through October. And we get that coat. Remember the COVID version of Gleyber Torres we got with people in the bleachers? We need that. If we can get that, we can go to the World Series. We can win the World Series. But it's a lot of ifs. There are question marks there. We don't know what's going to happen. I'm just thankful it did. It did happen. So let's be clear about that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, what it really comes down to is his on-base percentage the last 14 games is 400. The last 7 days is 455. Last 28 days is 343. He's just been he's thriving in that leadoff role. And it's so funny because we talk at nauseam about getting a leadoff bat. So much so, we even mentioned, Yandy Diaz at the deadline. You know, we mentioned, you know, Jazz, right? Jazz never had a chance. Like, they never let him lead off. And maybe that's for the best. But it's just funny. It's funny how sometimes the solution is always just right there. And sometimes it's just a matter of the timing of it. I mean, Torres wasn't the solution until the benching, like you just said. And Torres, my argument about the hit by pitch, and we'll get into the rest of the game. My argument about the hit by pitch is this. Baseball hitting, like hitting a baseball, I think it's not easy, but it can, you know, repetition everything in a batting cage. I feel like it is somewhat easy when you're just getting BP. What makes it hard is when now it's not just, hey, he's delivering a pitch. It's, hey, he's delivering 5 different variations of pitches. The spin rate's different, all of this. And then you have your mechanics. So you can actually beat yourself at the plate before the pitcher even throws the ball. And that's the thing. If your head is bobbing up and down and everything, you're basically giving them a free breaking ball, you know, in doing so. And I went through that because I had, you know, a batting stance where, you know, I kind of like A-Rod, I used to press down on, like, you know, my foot. And like, if you do that, you know, if you're not careful, you can bob your head up and down. It's like, why can't I hit the ball? It looked like it looked good when I saw it.
Yeah, the reason I bring it up is because Juan Soto, if everyone's been watching every game this year, you'll remember Juan Soto had a hand issue for a couple weeks there, and he missed the Dodgers series over it. It was obviously awful for baseball, but Juan Soto, while he was dealing with an injury, he was able to make sure the most important part of his game, which were his mechanics, stayed the same. Juan Soto was a productive player. Now, of course, this is a player at a different level. Absolutely. But we can't make excuses, and I know you're not in the business of making excuses for Gleyber Torres. No. You have no horse in the race, but I'm not necessarily, unless it's like an egregious injury where you just, I mean, you're talking about a knee sprain, something bad. I just can't use the health of a player, because Gleyber Torres, in my opinion, he's not the type of player where we're going to ask him to play hurt to the point where it's compromising his play. Right. Last year, year before, we were like, okay, Anthony Rizzo, he's a solid player for this team. But if he's dealing with an injury, get him off the field, please. Yeah. This is not a Juan Soto. This is not an Aaron Judge. So if that was an injury, if that injury getting hit by that pitch had that much of an effect to the point where he was essentially inoperable for 2 months, well, then he should have done us a favor and got himself off the field, because there were people in our system, and I'm not, again, I don't think this injury had an effect, but if it did, allow yourself to come off the field so that Peraza or somebody else like Cabrera can get in your spot and give us some level of production, because it would have made a difference. But like I said before, I thought Gleyber was fine. I just think he needed a kick in the rear end. He got it. And I should honestly say, I shouldn't even say it's good for us. It's good for him. It's going to make him a lot more money having been kicked in the rear end and shown, hey, you're going to be thrown out the door if you don't start playing harder, if you don't start performing. And that's really, isn't that what we've been asking for at Aaron Boone? Isn't not just from Boone, from absolutely. Leadership in general. If you don't do a job, you're going to be gone. So get it together. And they did that. And now we're looking at a version of Gleyber Torres who looks like he knows, if I don't play well, I won't be here. I won't be in pinstripes. I won't get the extension that I want. So now it looks like he's playing like he understands that. And we just have to hope the Yankees reap the reward of a player that's desperate to win and play well and hope it wins us a championship.
No, I agree with that. I think it's more so just there's so many things, like, you know, talking about like a golf swing, for instance, you could be 99%. Everything is perfect except for that 1% and can throw off your swing. And yeah, that's fine. Feel like with baseball having different pitches and whatnot, I do think just even something like that could be bothersome. And then, as we know, you've played baseball, I've played baseball, hitting is mental. Like, a lot of it can be mental. You can defeat yourself at the plate yourself. And so I think, you know, the thing that I notice a lot is when guys get into slumps, we saw it with Ben Rice immediately. Guys like to try to swing for the fences because they think a home run is going to essentially
change the game. But that's part of good players. Isn't that part of being a good player, is that you manage your emotions?
Well, I don't think Gleyber was a good player the last 2 months. And I think he's become what he was last year. And I would say this is probably the best version of him, because you're getting a guy who's getting on base. I don't need 38 home runs. Mm-hmm. All I need you to do when I have Juan Soto, Aaron Judge, and Stanton in the lineup and Wells is just get on base. Just set the table, like you mentioned last episode. So this is preferably what I want from Gleyber. If he tries to start swinging for the fences, which I don't think these last two home runs have him doing, but if he starts swinging for the fences, then I think he's kind of lost the plot. And, you know, he's not filling in his role, but I think he is. So moving on to Wells, first off, shout out to Wells. That snap throw to second, Gleyber with the ass tag. Love it.
the ass tag. Can I actually bring up something that Austin Wells did?
It wasn't even close. I can't even believe that guy ruled him safe. I'm convinced umpires will just rule him safe because they're like, yeah, it's going to get reviewed anyway.
Yeah. Can I actually bring up something that Austin Wells did that I thought was just spectacular? I was practically jumping up and down. And mind you, this was after seeing him get picked off. Okay. Believe it or not, guys, him being thrown out at second base, really getting picked off, was the best thing that I saw all day. Okay. And I'll explain to you why. Remember who was at the plate? Just to remind you guys, it was Anthony Volpe.
Who had three hits today.
Here's
that was done on purpose.
Here's why it was so brilliant. Austin Wells knew, okay, he's down in the count 1-2. This is a player who's got three hits already.
Yep.
Now we want, ideally, we want to see him come up in Anthony Volpe with probably to lead off the inning, right? In the way he's swinging the bat, or with a guy at second base. So Austin Wells decided, I'm going to leave first move against the lefty. If he goes home, I'm obviously going to be safe because I went first move. If he picks over when I went first move, I am now resetting the count and the inning and turning it over to Anthony Volpe.
Totally agree.
That is championship baseball. People could talk all day long. You look at the stat sheet. The Yankees were 0-for with runners in scoring position. Washington was 0-for with runners in scoring position. Just a lack of execution. But the Yankees scored multiple runs today, just running the bases and being smart, stealing third base with a DJ LeMahieu at the plate, and then you get a fly ball that turns into a run. It is that simple. Sometimes championship teams, you're going to turn them on and say, oh, I want to see a Kyle Tucker or an Altuve or an Alvarez. I want to see those guys go out there and hit a ball 450 feet. Every once in a while, you'll turn on SportsCenter and they do. But in a lot of their wins, in a lot of these championship teams, like the 2012 Giants, you don't turn on the team and then see Buster Posey driving in every run. It doesn't usually work that way, especially in important games. Sometimes it takes the whole team, the whole cast, doing smart things throughout the game, and you make your own luck. The Yankees, in my opinion, if you paid attention to the way they played today, I thought they were attempting deliberately making an attempt and making their own luck, playing smart baseball. And I like to actually see this type of stuff against inferior teams. This is an organization that plays under 500 teams. They don't play them very well. And it seemed like they're waiting for really Aaron Judge and Soto to hit three-run jacks, two-run jacks, hit grand slams, wait for them to rob homers, right? But today, it seemed like our role players remembered that they were role players. They remembered that they need to play smart baseball too. And it made this game comfortable. So shout out to our role players and especially Austin Wells, right? Anthony Volpe. Anthony Volpe had three hits. What did he do the next inning? He tried to lay down a bunt.
Yeah.
So this is a team of role guys. You may not be high on Volpe anymore. I'm not very high. I'm not thinking he's going to be the next Trey Turner. But damn it, when he shows up to the field with three knocks and he looks great, and he shows up his fourth at bat, and he's not trying to lace a ball in the gap and worry about getting laid later after the game. He clearly is just trying to get over to first base again and do his job. Well, then that's what gets me excited. Maybe all these other podcasters and show hosts, maybe they're excited by only watching Aaron Judge rob homers and look like Superman. That was super exciting for me too. I mean, I was jumping up and down when I saw it. But Jake, when I see the fundamentals of the game, I'm not going to get pissed at this Yankees team because they failed in this department year after year. So when they do something like this, I'm going to bring it up on this show.
No, I absolutely agree. It's funny. I don't remember if I said in the intro, but we literally just went 42 minutes without talking about Aaron Judge. That is this show in a nutshell. I mean, we really want to hit on everything. And so, you know, Alex Verdugo with his three hits, to your point, these guys that like even, I mean, I'll give LeMahieu credit, you know, two runs, you know, are two RBIs part of it. I mean,
he got them off the ground.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is that, yeah, you know, they can drive us insane, but this team on the road is the best team. And I'm going to say this, the Yankees on the road are an elite baseball team, not just the best team in the league. They are by far the best team in the league on the road. They're 42-25. When they're on the road, they absolutely mash teams. They do.
You feel like, by the way, let me ask you this question, because the Yankees, very clearly, they're not playing well at home.
No.
Do you think Yankee Stadium, the short porch, right? The whole crowd going crazy. Do you
overemphasis?
Think it changes? Do you just think that the Yankees tend to look to hit homers and kind of play a more sexy brand of baseball rather than doing some of the things we just mentioned, right? leaving first move, trying to drop down a bunt.
Maybe.
I like sometimes when I watch the Yankees play on the road, it seems like they're almost playing like road dogs. And then they get home and it's comfortable and they're right. They yeah. just play like it's
they have a the roll afternoon. Calls and yeah, right. no,
I, everyone's chilling and you're, hey, shout out to you guys. Thanks so much. You guys are awesome. And then you kind of get pumped up and now you show up to the plate and you want to hit a homer for the crowd, but then you go play in Washington and then now you're going to drop down bunts. I'm happy to see it, but do you think this is a factor at all?
Maybe a little bit. I have a hard time believing that their game plan is just to hit home runs in the short porch, but I mean, maybe. I mean, I think
it's not that simple. I don't think they're just trying to.
I know what you're saying, though.
But it's like fun to play at Yankee Stadium. But then when you go to Washington, it's like, well, let's get in and out of here. It's not fun to be in Washington. Right.
Yeah,
it's like no one wants it's to almost like this. No one wants to be in Washington, D.C.
Michael K. and Paul O'Neill do not want to be in Washington. D.C.
No, evidently. No. Shout out to Michael K. and Paul O'Neill. They didn't want to go to Washington.
So what I'll say is this. I think. And this is actually the strategic element of baseball because, yeah, you're cracking up over there. I see you. It's not like, so football, you have your defense and your offense, your different game plans. I mean, covering that sport long enough, you'll see everything. I mean, there'll be teams that literally they've already had it planned out for weeks. We're going to run our offense against the first five teams, but that sixth game, we know we're going to change things up. We're going to use trick plays. We're going to look like a completely different football team. That happens, right? That does. With baseball, the strategic element that I don't think is talked about is the field dimensions. You saw today, I mean, Juan Soto gave it a ride to center field. How far is center field in Washington? It looks like it's the Polo Grounds.
I don't even think it is far. I don't even know what it is. It just plays deep. It also
looks, it does play deep.
The way that it's shaped, I think, makes it look worse than what it is. I totally agree with you. It looks like a bomb. But
it's field dimensions, Gary. Yeah. That's my thing, is that I think it's not necessarily that they're playing into it. I think you're just adjusting on the fly. I don't think they have certain game plans like, oh, well, I'm going to hit it this way or I'm going to try to pull it today. I think really it all comes down to what you do in the moment. That's why managing a team is so crucial. And I think Aaron Boone did a nice job today managing this ball club. And he's done a nice job on the road. It's why they set the tone early on. Keep in mind, they started the season with two series on the road. I think they were both four game sets. If not, it was seven games total on the road to start the season in Houston, in Arizona. So congrats. You have to, you know, go up against the Houston Astros to start your season, first four games. And oh, by the way, after that, you're going to go to Arizona and play the NL reigning champions. Good luck. And the Yankees are like, bet, we're going to do that. They won, what, six straight?
I mean, yeah, they just look phenomenal. It's reminiscent of the team that you're seeing right now. It's no one has the expectation we're going to go win this game. We're going to go win the game. Then suddenly they go play a team where you say this should be a sweep. Should just go take care of business. This guy goes seven. We go relief, right? Closer, go home.
So this is sports, though. This is why people watch it, because the Yankees can't win every game. There's 162 games, and this is a sport where they're going to lose at least 62 games. This team will lose at least 62 games. Well, I don't even think,
is there a single team this year that's going to win 100 games?
I don't think so, there is. The Yankees lead the league, right? They lead the league right now.
I don't think a single, and we're probably going to win 94 games. I don't think there's going to be one team in baseball this year that wins 100 games. And that just goes to show you some of these teams just, you and whether they're not the same team at home.
Okay, road, Dodgers whatever. Have 78 as well. The Dodgers could do it. I could see that. They're playing better baseball as of late. They're 7-3, their last 10. The Yankees are 6-4. I mean, it would have to me, if you're going to win 100 games, you have to be in the seven. You have to be at least at 75 wins right now if you're going to win 100. Because it just doesn't make any sense. Like, you'd have to go 25-5 the rest of the year. You know what I mean?
So that's not happening for anybody.
So that's the thing. But that's the only way. So basically, the only teams that can win 100 games, in my opinion, and this is like if things go well for them, the Dodgers, the Yankees, the Phillies, the Brewers, the Orioles, the Diamondbacks, the Guardians, and the Padres, because they all have at least 75. The teams that realistically, like, that it's even close to likely that we'll get to 100 wins are the Dodgers, Yankees, Phillies, and Orioles. Like that, I mean, and I would honestly make the argument that really it's the Dodgers and Yankees, because yeah, Yankees have an easier schedule.
Exactly. Exactly. So we have the easier schedule, but I mean, we haven't played bad teams well this year. We're 19th best. I know we mentioned this last show, but for those of you watching this show for the first time, the New York Yankees are the 19th best team in Major League Baseball against teams below 500. So if you're looking at their schedule thinking, well, it should be easy pickings, you're right. This team that expects to try and go win the World Series should be taking care of business, should be beating up on Washington, should be beating up on teams like the Rockies. But as the series, as the year has gone on, they've proven we can't make that assumption. And I don't make that assumption. Frankly, I think the Dodgers are going to run into San Diego. They're going to run into Arizona. Those teams are too good for them to go in and impose their will to the point where they're going to go 25-5 the rest of the way. I don't see it. So it just goes to show you this whole thing's wide open. The Yankees need to show up with a pedigree to do things consistently that are the dirty work. You need to show up and play Washington like it's game two of the ALCS. Because if you don't think you're turning on the championship series and suddenly expecting guys who didn't do something. They didn't do any of the dirty work. They didn't take out the trash all year. And then suddenly before company comes over, you think the trash is being taken out. It's not. So remember, you need to see guys with good habits. Good habits against Washington will come to matter, because later on in the series, when you're asking Austin Wells to come up in a big situation on the base pass, he's going to do something smart because he did something smart today. But the players who do things dumb consistently, well, I hate to break it to you, when there's pressure on and everyone's watching, not just the lunatics like all of us who watch every game. No,
yeah,
the people who only watch in October, yeah, those are the bright lights, right? Where everybody is watching these games. The dirty work still needs to be done. Aaron Judge is going to have to play like a superhero in October to win, right? Juan Soto, same deal. But some of these other guys, the Wells, the Volpes, those guys, those are the trash men. They need to take out the trash today. So I have expectation they're going to do it tomorrow and into the future. So I was certainly pleased with what we saw today. I know it's not sexy to give Boone any credit, but remember, Boone helped unlock this version of Gleyber Torres we're seeing. We can't watch what Volpe and a lot of these guys are doing, dropping down bunts. We cannot look at what they're doing and then fail to give Boone any credit. Boone does deserve some credit in this situation. Whether or not it's enough to extend him or give him all the credit in the world and act like everything's great, no, he's going to be judged in October for what he gets done when it really matters. But this is a good step in the right direction.
I absolutely agree. And I think the thing about Boone is he unlocked, and I think we talked about this off air, so I wanted to make sure that this was on the actual show. He unlocked the Yankees for the next two games. Like now Garrett Cole tomorrow, you know, gets the nod and he has a bullpen behind him. You know what I mean? And so,
oh yeah,
there's less pressure on Cole to have to get through, be like, hey, yeah, sorry, we used all of our bullpen guys yesterday. So you're going to have to go eight. Like that's because Boone gave Nestor Cortez that run, let him pitch out of trouble, keeping him in there with the bases loaded, essentially jeopardized the entire game in a sense. So he got out of it. He trusted his guy. And, he gave the Yankees 6 2/3 today. And it gave the Yankees, you know, kind of more of a limited look at the bullpen. They still have plenty of guys the rest of the series. They're in the driver's seat to win it tomorrow, but they should sweep the Nationals, in my opinion. One thing I will say is when I was talking about the away record, I don't think I realized it earlier, but I really realize it now. I mean, the Yankees have 42 wins on the road, 42-25. Like the next best as far as win total, the Guardians are 35, or excuse me, they're not that great. It's the Orioles are 37-26 on the road, right? And then you have a 38-26 Padres. You have a 38-30 Diamondback. No one has 40 plus wins on the road except for the Yankees. The Yankees play their best ball on the road. And I think it's because they have bats, which honestly defeats any point with anyone trying to discredit the Yankees because they play in a quote unquote softball stadium. Why is it that they're better on the road? Why is it that Aaron Judge still has incredible statistics on the road? You know, it's so funny to me because, you know, the reality of it is, if you had to pick one team that makes the most sense based on what we've seen to this point. Really, the Yankees should be the favorite to win the World Series. They're the best team on the road by a mile. They've struggled at home, but I think they're going to be better at home in the postseason. I think that will turn around.
That's fair.
They score a ton of runs. They've scored 674 runs, and this is an offense that felt like it was anemic for half of the year. And then you look at the runs allowed. They've only given up 543 runs, Gary, and that's with the fact that their ace was hurt the majority of the season. Then their ace, you know, in waiting, and Luis Gil gets hurt. You
know, they've gone. Poteet's gone.
Schmidt, Poteet, and then other guys like fell off a cliff. I mean, Rodon struggled in that moment, and then you saw, you know, Nestor. We were talking about, like, he's going to be out of the rotation, and so there's been a lot of ups and downs for the Yankees, and yet still, you know, 543 runs. Their run differential is the best in the bigs. They have 15 more on the Dodgers. That's the same ball club that early on in the inception of this show, you said that they were the most fun team to watch because
100%.
They hit a lot of home runs. They're fun. Well, the Yankees on paper are technically more fun than the Dodgers. They score more runs. They don't give up as much. They have the best run differential in the big leagues. And this is a team right now that I've said, even though they lost the other day to the Rockies, I get that. People are upset. I wasn't super upset about that. I put that on Will Warren, if anything, to be honest with you. But more often than not, like in the last, say, 15, 20, you know, days, whatever, the Yankees have really been turning a corner. And I think a big reason for that is because of Gleyber Torres in the leadoff role. A big reason for that is because
turning the corner. I'm sorry. I have PTSD from the saying.
No,
from
I know.
Aaron Boone using the saying. I appreciate you being able to be mature and still use it because it's obviously it's applicable, especially given how they're playing.
I thought you were taking off your shirt on the show, and I was like, what's happening here?
No, we don't have enough subscribers for that. Enough members, I should say. But I mean, I actually agree with what you're saying about how the Yankees are going to play better at home. I actually do because I mean, the crowd's going to get electric. And then at some point or another,
teams are going to play worse at home at Yankee Stadium.
Like, we're going to crap our pants at some point. Every team craps themselves at home. They lose a game that nobody expected them to lose. You got Garrett Cole out there, right? A team's got Corbin Burns on the mound. You lose in Baltimore, and they say, well, what now? What now? And your team needs to have the pedigree. I know it's good to play well in October. That's all super important. But if you haven't done something well from May on to mid-August, and then for whatever reason you think that you should just expect different results in October, that doesn't happen often, ladies and gentlemen. It just doesn't. Most of the time when you say, God, where did this guy come from? Randy Arozarena, where did this guy come from? Well, a lot of people weren't watching very many Tampa Bay Rays games. Do you blame them? But the evidence was there all year. He didn't miss fastballs. That's what made him great. Yes, he was susceptible to breaking balls, but what do you see a lot of in the postseason? Well-located fastballs. Randy Arozarena could handle them. He did it all year. He was now doing it on the biggest stage. He broke Giancarlo Stanton's home run record. It just goes to show you, these guys are building habits all year long, day after day after day. And we're complaining about managers, right? Whether it be Dave Roberts, whether it be Aaron Boone, they make these decisions over and over and over again. And if you make enough positive decisions, when it gets to October baseball and there's that one or two decision, there's a decision where you say Boone needs to make this call. Remember when I talked to you earlier today and I said the decision here, he needs to leave Nestor Cortez in the game. Now, who is he facing? He was facing Abrams, Cruz, and Wood. What do all three players have in common? They're all lefty. They're all young. Well, actually, Cruz is righty. All three are young players. Every single one of them.
That bat was crazy.
It was insane. And what it did, you can see the mentality of what Aaron Boone was thinking about. If he can get through these young players who were trying to execute against the Yankees, the big bad Yankees, they're going to try and hit a ball out of the ballpark. They're going to try to essentially go above and beyond in this situation. I'm going to lean on the veteran. He's locating all night. I'm going to gamble that lefty on lefty Abrams is going to struggle. I'm going to gamble that Cruz, he's a rookie. In this situation, he's going to struggle. Wood, you mentioned you think he's going to be a really good player in this league. Well, guess what? It's his first year in the big leagues. He showed up. He had two walks today, had some pretty good at-bats, but he struggled in that at-bat. He struggled. And Nestor Cortez exposed him in this moment in his career. And Aaron Boone knew exactly what he was getting himself into. And it saved essentially 35 to 40 pitches out of our bullpen. So when you say 100%. The Yankees need to go sweep the Washington Nationals, and they can potentially, given the fact Baltimore is playing LA tomorrow, they're playing the Dodgers.
Yes. Three game set against a Dodgers team. Gary, this Dodgers team, when I say that they're good at home, they're good at home. Okay.
Go beat up on Baltimore.
This
go
is a 43-23 home team. The Yankees are 36-29. Like the Dodgers are the best home team in the league. They're tied with the Phillies. But those night games across the country and everything, like Baltimore, that's not going to be like easy for them, to be honest with you. I mean, Baltimore is 43-34 in night games. So I'm not going to say that, you know, but the Dodgers, Gary.
Well, this sets up at the very least for LA to win the series.
54 of their 78 wins have come at night.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously they play a lot at night, but at the very least, this is setting up for Baltimore to lose the series. They play the series. Baltimore could just, for whatever reason, go out and sweep them. But you have to think of the odds here. The odds are Baltimore is going to be fighting for their life this whole series. If the Yankees can set up in game one, you extend your starting pitcher out into inning seven. Now you went with nobody. Essentially, Clay Holmes was your one high leverage guy you used. Now you can have the expectation that the Yankees can go out and sweep Washington. They still may not. But when you have expectations to do something like that, you don't get four innings out of your starter game one and then expect to go win game two and three. It doesn't work that way. You're behind the eight ball already. So now that the Yankees have taken care of business in game one, my expectation is to go win game two. That's my expectation. And then after that happens and you have a 2.5 to 3 game lead on Baltimore, you let them just go beat themselves up in LA. Let it happen. And then when we have series later on this year, they're not so high stake. We're up 3 or 4 games in the division. That's the position we need to be in. We need to have these series played at Yankee Stadium. I don't care what we did all year at Yankee Stadium. It needs to improve, no doubt about it. But you think because we played well on the road that I'm putting a major emphasis on getting home field? I absolutely want it.
No, God,
no. And I know you aren't either. It's a good thing to have in your back pocket knowing we have home field. We expect to play better there. But if it comes down to it, game six on the road, and we got punched in the mouth for whatever reason, you surprise us, we have the pedigree to go win on the road, and I think that's a good thing for New York.
100%, totally agree. As it stands right now, I think the Yankees are the best team in baseball. I think they should be considered the favorite to win the AL. And I think that that road record, I think that matters. That is going to translate that, Gary. I think that's going to translate to the postseason. But you know what else is going to translate to the postseason? At home. And I think playing at Yankee Stadium is a lot easier said than done. But playing at Yankee Stadium in October is different. Mm-hmm. I've been to an October game. I know you said that you've been to postseason games before, obviously. That game against the Guardians, you would have thought that was the American Championship League series. I mean, like, that series against the Guardians, they had Nick Swisher out there before the game. The lights are all out. There's a spotlight on Swisher. He has the American flag. He's running around the diamond going crazy. Like, it was just absolutely, like, the feeling, the emotion, the energy was there. Now, tomorrow, the Yankees get to go up against the guy that they should absolutely destroy. At one point, I remember him visiting the Yankees. I think he and his wife visited the Yankees during free agency.
Patrick Corbin pitching tomorrow? Patrick Corbin's pitching tomorrow?
Patrick Corbin versus Gerrit Cole. Do you remember when
win tomorrow?
Yankee Stadium, the thing is like, welcome Patrick Corbin. They had him in stripes.
Yes.
Yeah. I bet he wishes he just signed with the Yankees. But He's 3-12 this year with a 5.73 ERA, a 1.54. I don't think he does.
I don't think he wishes he played for us. Imagine if Patrick Corbin, dude, imagine how we'd be, no offense to Patrick Corbin, could you imagine how we'd be treating him if he was pitching to a 5.73?
Maybe he would have been different in New York. That's how I would look at it. If my career went sour when I signed somewhere, I'd be like, all right, I wish I signed somewhere else.
I'm glad we don't have to find that out. Because if Patrick Corbin's contract was in New York, could you imagine that? If he was this version, I mean, Yankees fans would be on his back before the game ever started.
Aaron Judge and Juan Soto are going to have another game where they both go yard. It's happening.
Well, I'll tell you this. If Giancarlo Stanton is hitting a home run tomorrow, so you can just watch this podcast. I don't care what anybody else does. We should win the game. There's no question about it. It's baseball, so I've seen crazier things. I've seen Garrett Cole just go out and get shelled by worse teams for whatever reason. But I'll tell you, Patrick Corbin and Giancarlo Stanton, they're going to have a date tomorrow night, and it's home run city. I'm telling you.
20 home runs he's given up this year. 20. So,
yeah.
Giancarlo.
If he's on the lineup, I quit.
That's that. And then the Wednesday game, which is on Prime Video, those of you who don't know, Mackenzie Gore versus Carlos Rodon. Rodon's pitching very well as of late. And Mackenzie Gore, he's a capable pitcher, doesn't give up a lot of home runs. They don't, really leave the yard very often. He walks a lot. That's his issue. 1.56 whip, 4.51 ERA, 7-11. I could see the Yankees, if they're going to lose any game, it won't be tomorrow. It's going to be probably the Gore game. And that would mean that like Rodon just had kind of like a game where he gave up 4 or 5 runs, right? But realistically, Gary, I think they sweep them. And I think we're gonna see the Dodgers take 2 out of 3 against Baltimore, which we'll take. We don't need a sweep. We'll take a sweep. We don't need it. Like the Astros, all you needed to do was win the series. That's all you needed to do.
Oh, but they blew that, man.
Yeah, they actually hurt them too. They were hot, and then that Orioles series kind of slowed them down a little bit. But they won today, 5-2. They hit the lucky number 5. Like, I don't remember the last time they lost scoring 5 runs. So that means I got to give them a good movie. So we're going to go with American Psycho.
That's a good movie.
Oh, it's fantastic.
That's with Christian Bale, right?
It was Christian Bale. It's got Justin Theroux. It's got Reese Witherspoon is in it.
Reese Witherspoon's a billionaire?
Really?
Yeah, she started a thing called Book Club. And what she did was she essentially like got all these books together. I don't remember the idea, but she essentially like budgets to have people start movies after these books that she essentially will purchase out. So now she owns like the script of all these different scripts that she likes. And when they create a movie about it, she gets royalties from those movies. And she has made over $1 billion doing it. So shout out Reese Witherspoon.
Very smart person.
Very smart person.
To have that, yeah. And she's great. Love her. Great actress. Now, in the movie, like she's not like prominent. She's in it, but she's not prominent. What's his face? Jared Leto is also in it. Oh, okay. Yes. Jared Leto is in it. The Hey Paul scene.
Great movie.
The reason why I love it so much, it's one of my all-time favorites, actually. It's not a horror movie. It's a psychological thriller. It's, in my opinion, Christian Bale's best. I think it's his best film. I think the acting range is
better insane. Better than The Dark Knight Rises?
Yes. No. Like, I like The Dark Knight more.
I
The Dark Knight more, he's a better actor as Patrick Bateman.
That's a fair take. No, I just think it's a fair take. I don't agree, but I'm open to it. Okay.
And he's great. Love Willem Dafoe. So the reason why I love this movie, so it's not the main reason, but you know how today, like everything, like messaging wise, like if you're trying to have hidden messages and content, it's always, it's not hidden anymore. It's like, nah, that's like the Acolyte, we'll just say. Well, yeah, let's not be around the bush. They throw it in your face. She-Hulk. Yeah. There you go. All men are bad, according to She-Hulk. So with this, I thought they did a really nice job of kind of throwing in messaging. By the way, Mary Harron directed it. So, you know, female directors can have those messaging without making it so obviously in your face. And there's really good messaging in that movie that is done in a way that is, I think, it doesn't ruin the movie. It kind of even adds some layers to it. So check it out if you haven't already. There's so many people I know that haven't seen this film, and yet they'll post memes about it all the time. And I'm like, do you even know where that comes from? Like the business card scene?
I mean, memes are more important than movies and art these days.
No, but I've seen this movie. I've seen this movie like 15 times. So yeah, if you got to this point, type in American Psycho. If you got to this point and you've typed in American Psycho, but you haven't watched it, literally cancel all your plans and watch American Psycho for the next hour and 45 minutes. You will not regret it.
Yeah, and shout out to all our members today. Great questions. I thought that was super fun. So hopefully we get more questions, because I wanted to make sure we drove that home that for those of you who are members, you can give us mailbag. We absolutely will answer them on the show. Hopefully it doesn't feel like the show's slower pace. We'll adjust the show however you guys like it, but yeah, I enjoyed that.
Absolutely. So if you want to get into that, you want to be a part, there's a join button, which I just found out not that long ago. It's below this video. You'll see it's join right around the same spot where it says subscribe. If you haven't already subscribed, shame on you. Just kidding. But hit that subscribe button. But the join button will get you right where you need to go if you want to be a member. And if you can't find the join button, it's always going to be in our description and it's going to be pinned in our comment section below.
Yeah. So like this video.